Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. It is tough to be a sports fan in Wisconsin and not have strong feelings about Brett Favre. The iconic athlete was beloved for his 16 seasons as a quarterback for the Packers and then reviled for his retirement, followed by his non-retirement and his seasons playing for the New York Jets and then the Minnesota Vikings.
Wisconsin sports fans have largely warmed back up to Favre since his permanent retirement from football. And while a new biography called Gunslinger illustrates what made Favre such a respected player, it also shines a light on some of the reasons feelings are still conflicted about him, including some episodes that might not be appropriate for younger ears. The book is written by sports writer Jeff Perlman, who joins us on the line from California. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So your book mentions in quite a few places, actually, that there has already been a lot written about Brett Favre. So what do you think has been lacking in the many other books about this guy that you wanted to fill in?
Depth. Detail, insight. No, I don't mean that. Like, I'm not saying like I'm the world's greatest writer. I'm saying it's like the same narrative repeated over and over again. You know, it's kind of lazy stuff. There hasn't been a good Favre book, maybe ever, but there hasn't been a definitive biography on him in eons. And never. And I just think like he's a fascinating guy with an amazing backstory, and nobody has told it. So I just think enough time has passed from the mass annoyance of retire, unretire, that it was time that I could do it. So here I am.
Well, and it's interesting. I gather Brett Favre did not actually speak with you for this book, but he also did not seem to stand in your way either, which I wonder, is that his own kind of subtle form of cooperation?
No, I would not. I would not say so. I would say what happened, if I'm going to be honest.
Sure.
His family all just helped out. They all cooperated. And they knew he wasn't, and they just did because they're just those kind of people where you show up and you take your time to show up, they'll talk to you. It's weird, but true. So he probably just at some point was a little exasperated by it all. That's my guess. And was like, oh, all right, if you want to talk, you know, talk. Like, okay, go talk. I don't care. Like, I talked to his mom. I talked to his brothers. I talked to his sisters. I talked to his aunts, nephews. I'm sure at some point he was like, fine, just whatever. If you want to talk to him, talk. I don't think he was thrilled by it. I just think he was exasperated by it, probably.
Well, what was your own impression of Brett Favre as you got into this project?
I kind of came to love the guy. I really did. It's sort of funny. He had a lot of flaws. There were tons of ups and downs. There were tons of mistakes made. I mean, a lot of mistakes made. A lot of dumb things done in his life in the name of sex, in the name of drugs, in the name of legacy to a little degree. He just did a lot of dumb things. But he's 47 now. He's married. He's a grandfather. He's a good husband by all accounts. I just think like part of the sort of joy of biography is you see the rise and the fall and then the rise again, you know, and here he is now, you know, he's back in good graces in Green Bay. He's in the Hall of Fame. Like things have worked out for the guy. And I love that. I really do. I think that's great. That's how it should be. You know, end of the day, you're okay. And I feel like at the end of the day, he's okay. It worked out.
Well, and you mentioned these dark times that you chronicle, and many of us might generally be aware of his problems with painkiller addiction, with drinking, with womanizing. But what we might not know is the extent to which the Packers and the publicity machine around them really protected him.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was, you know, the Packers were weird. They were weird during this process. They were very standoffish and guarded. And I was coming off a book I wrote about the L.A. Lakers of the Showtime era called Showtime. You would have thought that the Lakers would have been extremely protective because of everything going on and Magic, you know, everything with Magic. And the Lakers could not have been better. I mean, they were, what do you want to know? How can we help you? Who do you want to talk to? The Packers are completely opposite. Not very helpful, standoffish. They were okay at the end, but never great. And it's a nervous thing, them and Favre, especially last year when he was about to be have his number retired. There's a nervousness there. It's always been there since he left for Minnesota. And I don't think they've totally gone past that, actually.
Well, and you spoke with, I think, more than 500 people for this book. And a lot of those were people that covered Favre and the Packers for years. And maybe I'm reading between the lines here a bit, but it sounds like a lot of the stories you relate are ones that these reporters wish they could have covered at the time.
I don't know if wish is the right word. I think it's a tricky situation when you are a beat writer in a town like Green Bay, Wisconsin. I mean, not only do people live and die with the team, people own the team, right? So I'm from New York. You're from Boston. We grew up in cities with competitive newspaper environments where it was dog-eat-dog, where, you know, if you found out that Derek Jeter, just as an example, a fictional example, if you found out Derek Jeter was having an affair. He wasn't even married. But Derek Jeter's having an affair. Andy Pettit's having an affair. Well, the Post and the Daily News, they're not just running it. They're trying to get photos. In Green Bay, if you find out Brett Favre is having an affair, it's like, what do you do with that exactly? You know, do the people even want to know that? Does it affect his play on the field? How much do we need to write about that? So there were whispers for years. You know, there was, I forgot who it was. There was one writer I talked to who, his editor assigned him to do a piece about Brett Favre, the amazing family man. And he's like, I'm not doing that. He refused to do it. He said, I'm not doing that. I'm not writing nonsense like that. So maybe there was a little rebellion, but I don't think there was a all-out assault on covering Brett Favre that way. And maybe that's okay. Maybe the market just doesn't call for it.
Well, and I wonder also how much of this was made possible by the fact that most of his career was played before the social media era.
Oh, I mean, look what happened when social media came along and he was taking pictures of his private part. 6 million views, don't lie. He, yes, couldn't have been what he was with iPhones. You just couldn't. You couldn't be that way with the iPhone around. It's impossible. You can't go out to bars and fool around. You can't be drinking like he drank. I mean, there's a video on YouTube that surprisingly few people have seen, but it exists. It's there. Of him at a bar, super early in his Green Bay years, singing a True Live Crew song that makes some graphical references with these scantily clad women walking back and forth. Now, if this had come out when he was playing, it would have gotten 100 million views. He would have had to apologize. Maybe he would have been suspended. People would have questioned his marriage, his fidelity, blah, blah, blah. It's just a different age. He could not have been Brett Favre how he was then, now. No way.
Right. I mean, one of the impressions we're left with is that he seems like he represents really the end of a certain era of professional athletes.
I would say he was the tail end. Like, I wrote a book about the 86 Mets, and those guys used to have beer in the clubhouse. And then they would go out to bars in New York and Long Island, and it was no big deal. Favre was a guy of that era who stretched his career so long that he ended up, you know, like at the end of his career, you'd walk into a locker room and everyone's listening on their headphones, their portable devices. The era he came along in, was everyone joking with each other, farting in each other's faces. And he just, he entered with that and exited with a totally different environment. He spanned different eras technologically and socially in sports.
The other thing that really struck me was the idea that a lot of his kind of hillbilly nature was really an act he put on for the media.
Oh, yeah. It was funny. He's smart. I mean, not only is he college educated, which just isn't an equal intelligence, but he was smart and perceptive and keen. And he realized, this is one of the recurring themes of this book that I heard about a million times. If he was asked, if he did a press conference for 15 minutes and he took 5 minutes to answer every question, well, he only had 3 questions to answer. If he answered every question in 20 seconds, he had an interminable number of questions to answer. So he was smart about it. And he would go into the draw and he'd talk stories about Mississippi and the alligators and the Oreo cookies. And he would get into this sort of thing, and, well, you know, that makes me think of the time with my dad. And, you know, he would get the accent on all thick, which wasn't even as thick anymore. He was super smart about it. It was just, he was savvy, very, very savvy guy.
So Favre gets towards the end of his career, and at a time when he could be seen as the wise veteran who helps usher in the next generation, Aaron Rodgers say, he never quite embraces that role.
No, he did not. But I will say in his defense, and kind of important, it's a common story. You know, it's not like Dan Marino was itching for someone to replace him, you know, or John Elway was itching for someone to replace him. These guys hold on to their jobs for dear life. And Favre, you got to remember, he took over because Don Majkowski got hurt. And that stuck with him. You know, like, you don't just lose a job. You lose a job for a reason. So his backups were always these kind of, you know, okay players, Craig Knowles and Doug Peterson, but they were never threats. And here's a threat for the first time. You know, a guy who can flat out play, who was given big money, who was brought into a place. So Favre was, I can't say he was horrible to him, but he wasn't nice to him, you know, and he definitely did not look out for him. And if Aaron Rodgers struggled, it wasn't like Brett Favre was going to lose sleep over it, you know, and he kind of played along with the antics and the mocking and making his life difficult. And, you know, he was, again, it wasn't that much different than what other guys did in other locker rooms, but it wasn't helpful.
Can you share some insights into Brett Favre's life today? I mean, he has done some curious things, like, you know, commercials for a nose hair trimmer, personal groomer thing that I would have sworn was a fever dream if I hadn't seen it on television. His life today is somewhat different than other big-time athletes who have called it quits. He's not a color commentator.
Nope, or a coach, doesn't want to do it. He's 47. He's a he's in large part a volleyball dad. You know, his daughter Breely is a highly regarded high school volleyball player about to go to college. He's a his wife does triathletes. Is a very good athlete. And, he goes, he supports her. He did his first triathlon recently. One thing he's done that's really smart is his first year retired, he got kind of overweight, and he ran a 5K, and it was pathetic, and he was embarrassed. And he's gotten in really good shape. Like, he's not the guy who just stayed on the couch, which would have been a disaster. He's a guy who's out there running, exercising, and he's sharp, he's active, he's involved. He's kind of living a very admirable life.
As you said earlier in the interview, he finally seems like he got exasperated and said, if you want to talk to my relatives, talk to my relatives and friends and whatever, but he did not really talk to you. Was there one question that you really wish you could have sat down and asked him?
I'll be honest, and this is going to sound kind of weird, but I'm still bewildered by the pictures with the Jets. Like, what would make a guy in his 40s think that it's a good idea to send pictures and leave cell phone messages to a woman in her 20s while you're married who works for the team? You know, it's bewildering. And it's such a low moment, you know, for him, for her, for his wife, for the family. It was just humiliating. And I am fascinated by what the hell is going on through his head when he did that. So I wouldn't like the answer he would give me, and he would hate that question. But just being honest, I'm totally fascinated by it.
Well, and it is there right towards the end of his career. I mean, you can't sort of help but be left with a little of that impression of Brett Favre, you know, the 40-something-year-old guy.
Yeah, and also it's the funny thing is it's kind of become a little bit of a legacy thing where that was a thing for athletes. That was a big thing for athletes. Take a picture of your package, send it to a woman. It sounds so stupid, and it is stupid, but it really became a thing. And that became the warning sign. I said recently, and it's a callous comparison, but I really mean it. What Magic Johnson's HIV announcement was for free sex among professional athletes, Brett Favre's Deadspin appearance became what shots of your privates were for athletes. It was just this giant, we need to change our way, we can't do this, because it could end up in total humiliation.
Were his relatives, were they kind of glad to tell some of these stories? Because as you say, they really haven't shown up in a lot of the other stuff that's been written.
Yeah, but I don't think that was their motivation. I don't think it was about being heard or finally getting their due. I think, honest to God, I think they showed up. I think they talked because someone asked. As simple as that sounds, I swear to God, I think they talked because someone showed up and asked. I think that's as basic as it got. You ask the questions, all right, well, you're here. You came down to Mississippi. Pull up a chair. That's it.
Well, Jeff Perlman, it is super interesting stuff, and thank you so much for sharing it with us, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Jeff Perlman is the author of Gunslinger, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. Perlman will talk about the book tomorrow evening at a Boswell Books event at the Elm Grove Public Library.